Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. It's where community grows.
Magandang gabi sa inyong lahat, and welcome to the Filipino American National News. I'm Alan Bunju. On today's show, we have a very special guest. We have comedian G.R. De Guzman, who has been featured on Kevin Hart's Heart of the City on Comedy Central, Netflix's comedy lineup, along with being a performer at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal. And he also has a comedy album out called Dual Citizens. Welcome to the show, JR.
How's it going? Happy to be here. Happy to be part of the Filipino community in Minneapolis. I don't even know how Filipinos ended up in Minneapolis, but I'm excited about it. It's cold. And then it gets hot and humid like the Philippines for like 2 months. And then it goes back to being cold again.
I guess the short answer to your question, nurses and doctors in the 60s with the Mayo Clinic is probably one reason why they made the migration here to the Twin Cities. But speaking of migration, you were born in the Philippines and you came to the U.S. somewhere around the age of one, starting off in Los Angeles and then eventually moving to Sacramento around 10 years old. What can you tell us about growing up in those two different sort of communities?
Sure. So I moved to from the Philippines to the U.S. Actually, like probably around when I was like around one. Lived in L.A. from 1 to 5, and then went to Sacramento from basically kindergarten and on. And I think I was pretty young when I was in L.A., but the takeaway I got from it, from stories from my parents versus Sacramento, LA was very fast paced. Definitely, you gotta have a thicker skin and there's definitely a grind. And, but that's where my grandma was from. And she was a grinder, she was out there. She got a house in Silver Lake back when Silver Lake was cheap. And, near Echo Park, near historic Filipino town, there's just these Filipino communities where a lot of the work you would get was through word of mouth. Like you knew somebody at the bakery or you met somebody at church who said, hey, we need somebody to run a daycare and she would run a daycare, stuff like that. And my mom left LA. I hope I'm getting the story accurately, but she was a dentist and she was working for another dentist, like as an associate. And somebody kind of aggressively threatened her in the office, the dental office, like a patient. I think because maybe he didn't have the money, the insurance, whatever. And then she knew like, this isn't where I want my kids to be at this time. And we moved to Sacramento and Sacramento was nothing at the time. It was like a cow town. This is the early days of the Sacramento Kings when they just started to be good and where they would bring cowbells to the Kings game, and we were known for having the loudest arena. Sleep Train Arena, rest in peace. But those two communities, growing up in California as a young Filipino, I'm definitely very thankful. It's one of the best places to grow up.
And for our listeners that aren't familiar with your comedy, you do generally incorporate a guitar. And so for the people that don't know the J.R. De Guzman story, I mean, which talent did you have first? Was it the comedy? Was it the singing? Was it playing instruments from a guitar to, I believe, something I've yet to see you play, drums and piano?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, comedy, it's interesting because the instinct of it, I think, is in you as a little kid when you're joking with your brothers, joking with your friends. But learning how to actually craft jokes, that didn't come until later, when I was, like, in college. But music, on the other hand, being Filipino, growing up with karaoke, growing up with parents who sing, there was always music. The first music thing I did was choir. and I did it kind of on a dare. All my friends were like making fun of choir. We did it ironically. They're like, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if we all jumped in and did choir? I went to a Catholic school, so it was like a church choir. And we went to the rehearsal. I was the only one that showed up at the actual mass and sang. I was like a little 8-year-old just like singing for this choir. And then it stuck with me. I really liked singing. Piano was one of my first instruments. And then I quit because somebody made fun of me. Like piano wasn't cool. And then I got into drums in 8th grade. So I started playing drums at 13. And then at 17, you know, I liked singing and I saw my best buddy, his name's Chris, Vietnamese guy. He was singing and playing guitar. And my girlfriend at the time was like, wow, I never realized how cute Chris is. And, you know,
you and peer pressure of different sorts.
It's all peer pressure. That's what navigate, you know, is always to impress a girl back in the day. Cause like, when I learned drums, there was like the girl I had a crush on in 8th grade was like, oh, wow, Tom is so hot. Cause he was playing drums at this talent show. It's like, I'll show you, Sydney. I'll show you I can play drums. And so, yeah, I picked up drums. I picked up guitar. All the like impress a girl. And then eventually, like, I thought I wanted to be a rock star. I wanted to go into music. And then I started taking these stand-up comedy classes in college. And that's when things really started picking up and seeing that, oh, I have a knack for this. Let's see where this could go.
And you said you went to college, and you said your mother's a dentist. From what I know of you, basically your whole family are a bunch of dentists. You chose the completely different route. How come?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the real deep answer of that is I got in a car accident when I was 17. I wasn't driving. My friend was driving. I was a straight A student. I had this like national merit scholarship to go to any UC school that I wanted to, because of like how I did on the PSATs. And then I got into this accident my junior year summer going into senior year. And I just, something switched in me. I mean, it could have just been my brain got messed up for all I know, but I became less of a focus on school and grades and jobs and all this stuff. And focused on, to be honest, like what makes me happy in life? What is my passion? What's my purpose? And got really focused on people. And so I kind of became a really bad student. I almost didn't graduate high school after that. And I got really focused on music and creativity and arts and my friends. And that's what took me away from the path of like medicine that, you know, my parents really, really wanted me to go in. Hey, what's up? There's a little
yeah, say hi.
Daughter's walking in, and yep. I just wanted to give a wave. Shout out to Filipinos and family. But yeah, you know, speaking of like that, you know, I remember what I told myself at 17, and I was like a emo sort of emotional, like 17-year-old sensitive Filipino playing the guitar. You know, I was like, you know, I want life to be about love at this point, and like the things that you love and the people you love. So I realized I didn't love medicine. I was doing it because my parents wanted me to do it. And I really got focused on arts and creativity.
I think I tend to notice that maybe Filipino guys sometimes tend to be hopeless romantics to some degree.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I knew that's where it's like when I hang out with my white friends, like, I don't know if they get it when I'm talking about the ways that I'm describing things. And then when I hang out with Filipinos, you know, we lead with our heart. Most definitely.
And the one thing that I like about your comedy is sometimes comedians, they'll pick on a stereotype. And I think sometimes when I listen to some of your stuff and you perform, you kind of defy certain stereotypes when it comes to your performances. I mean, two of your famous bits are interracial babies and Asian guys can smash.
Yeah.
Why did you think it was important to, you know, cover, you know, somewhat taboo subjects, you know, especially, I guess, maybe from an Asian comic?
Sure. I mean, it's, I've always, as I evolved as a comic, I felt like I had to talk about the things that I cared about and thought about. And I definitely had insecurities as an Asian kid in school, about like, you know, can Asian men be hot? You know, like there was like all these stereotypes of Asian men in movies not being attractive, or the nerdy best friend, or you just know martial arts. And so I felt like I wanted to go 100% the other way. And you know what, man? Like the love that I got on that song was so like validating, and getting past all the stuff that I went through in grade school to be like, oh, cool, man. Like one other Asian dude started reaching out, like as if I was like Martin Luther King Jr. I have a dream. They're like, thank you, man. Thank you. And then, but then also like, you know, girls who are like dating Asian guys or whatever, were like, oh yeah, yeah. Like I think Asians are hot. And so yeah, like whenever I write a joke or something, it's always, there's a seed of something I really care about in it. And it just makes it more palatable to swallow.
In terms of when you do perform, obviously you perform in cities that are largely populated with Filipinos. And then there are smaller communities, mid-sized communities like Minnesota here. Where do you think you get more of the support from, the larger cities of Filipinos or the ones who are from the not known towns, but once they know that there's a, you know, Filipinos are very, they claim everybody, any ounce of Filipino.
Sure.
So do they come out in more droves, one compared to the other?
Well, honestly, both, everywhere. So like I've been to towns where I didn't even know that there would be Filipinos there. And then it's packed with Filipinos in the audience. And then I've been to other towns where it's like a big city and then they come out. So it's really everywhere. Like, I think the Filipinos definitely are excited to see other Filipinos, like everywhere we go. I mean, I was at the airport the other day and me and a security guard bonded. Just, I heard like a little bit of accent and I was like, are you Filipino? She's like, oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, so definitely, both in the big cities and the small towns, I've seen both.
You've talked about your car accident when you were younger. What I noticed about you, certain epiphanies or metamorphoses happen in your life, fan life, baptism, ninjutsu. Mm-hmm. What have those impacts have had on you in the last, say, 5 years or so?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's something I'm starting to talk about more on stage as I get vulnerable on stage and try to reach for other things that I care about in the moment. And in 2018, 2019 was kind of this time that I had more of an interest in my spirituality and like, and who I am. I was like, okay, I'm doing all these things in my career, like really focused on my career and trying to build, but you know, what, finding a focus on like what, like the why, how, why does this actually make me happy, or what actually makes me happy? I started to find that there was another place or like void that I had to fill. And it was definitely one with spirituality. You know, I got baptized, started going to church. My church actually had a jujitsu gym there. And so that's how I started going, was I went to go do jujitsu. I needed a hobby outside of work. And that one of the pastors did jujitsu there. And so I started going to the services more and getting interested in that again. And oddly enough, like getting baptized and having the spiritual awakening transitioned into, hey, you know what? I've always wanted to live and travel in a van. So I sold all my stuff. I got rid of my apartment and traveled around in a van basically up until the pandemic.
And just a reminder, our listeners, you're listening to comedian J.R. DeGuzman, who will be here in the Twin Cities for the Minneapolis Comedy Festival June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Assembly at the Women's Club. Yesterday marked the 2-year anniversary of the unfortunate death of George Floyd. We spoke about how you have comedic songs, but when you go on your YouTube, you have a song about George Floyd. You don't just do comedy when it comes to music.
Yes, yeah, yeah. The wow, it's wild that it's the around this time, all the George Floyd stuff, you know, and how long it's been, and yet and how that's changed everything. But yeah, you know, I remember when that happened, everyone was posting right away. And I thought about, as a creative, you know, there's all these different mediums to get out the same feeling or idea. And I couldn't find, like, for myself, you know, I don't think there's something like funny I want to say about this. And so I used sort of the other medium of serious music and wrote that song, No Justice, No Peace, just to kind of like express like what I was feeling on it. What could I say on this? And you know, I think there was a lot of different opinions that came out, but I think just for me, coming from an honest place of my perspective, not telling anyone what they should do or how you should believe, but this is like how I can contribute to this conversation, was through the medium of a serious song. It was that's how I felt like I could contribute to it. But yeah, I love music. I've always loved music and serious music. I want to do an EP at some point of just serious music separate from the comedy.
You like to try new things, interesting places and new towns. What cool things would you say you've seen or tried in different places, or even here in Minnesota while you've spent time here?
Yeah, well, one, let's see. I like doing escape rooms when I travel, if I can do an escape room. I try to see something that's like unique to that place. So something I haven't gotten to do yet, but I want to do in Minneapolis, is the Prince Museum. I want to see that so badly. And then of course, like trying the food in each town, but yeah, my girlfriend's actually in Minneapolis. So I'm in your city quite a bit, and I've been through North Loop, Edina, where else, Uptown, Northeast, I've spent a little bit of time in St. Paul, but yeah, there's been a lot of cool stuff. Like, is it Biddy Makoska? Is that how you say it?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I spent some time out there. Minneapolis has the best lakes. So many cool lakes out there. I mean, Lake Biddy Makoska, obviously just a small park lake, but I also went boating and did, it's not skimboarding, but it's like the surfing one, wake surfing.
Wakeboarding?
I did that out there. Yeah, I did. Went wakeboarding and wake surfing out there. It was really fun.
Well, we've known lately there's just now a plethora now more Filipino American comics. Is there a brotherhood or sisterhood amongst the fellow comedians?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm really grateful to be surrounded by the Filipino comedians that I'm surrounded by. Just to list off a few names of guys that like have kind of come up, both some ahead of me and some like on the same, like we started together. Andrew Rolfo is a guy from the Bay Area that's so funny. Joey Gila was kind of like this guy who, when I started it, has been one of my favorite comics. There's so many more, I don't want to forget names. Andrew Lopez, Wilfred Padua is really funny in the East Coast. Ron Jossel, yeah, there's so many. And then actually Joe Coy just reached out to me like recently, and he's one of those guys, everything you've heard about how much he tries to support Filipino comics, it's all true. You know, it's wild. He's a guy who's really kicked down the doors and opened up the paths for a lot of people.
And before we come down to the end of the interview, we sometimes kind of have like a speed round, just random questions.
Yeah.
If you had a go-to dish in regards to Filipino food, is there something that you're known for cooking?
Oh, cooking? No, not I'm not definitely not known for cooking anything, but I'm known for microwaving things the next day. but you know, I tried cooking adobo one time, and that's probably the best thing I've ever made, was adobo.
You're known for your singing. Is there a go-to karaoke song?
Oh, a go-to karaoke song. I love Bruno Mars, like Versace on the Floor, but I definitely don't do it the Bruno Mars justice, but I could do a little Versace on the Floor.
GR, with you being a comedian, I've heard in the past that you've performed in a library right when it was finals for somebody, for a school. Mm-hmm. Are there any other weird places that you have performed at that people would find unique?
Yeah, you do your research, man. Where did you hear that? That's so funny, that story.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. I figure that if I'm gonna have somebody on the show, I gotta be well versed.
Yeah, I love that. Well, yeah. So I did the library at a college during finals week. I've done retirement homes, and I would just flirt with the older ladies in the crowd a lot of the times, as like do crowd work and stuff. One time I did a college where everybody was like roller skating, and then I had to perform in that like gym where they're roller skating, and they stopped everybody for a little bit to get 30 minutes of jokes. I did my jokes, and then they went back to roller skating. Yeah, I've done a lot of weird ones.
What sort of effect has you having been on the Kevin Hart special, Heart of the Cities, and the comedy lineup on Netflix, what sort of impact has that had on your career? I mean, you've been in the game for about 8 years or so.
So actually, I just hit 11.
11, okay.
Years. Mm-hmm. 10 was a big milestone, but Heart of the City was the first major TV credit I had. It was for Comedy Central in 2016, I want to say. And it's weird because in the moment, what it did was build confidence for me. You know, it didn't necessarily right away build like a huge fan base or anything like that, but built confidence and, okay, I can do TV. I can do stand up at this level. You know, there's something here. I don't know what it is. There's a path. And, but actually years later, during the pandemic, Comedy Central started needing to put out digital content because they weren't recording new specials. And they needed to keep up somehow. So they're like, well, let's just put out old content that we had. And the resurfacing of that actually gave me a great boost of momentum and new fans of people who had never seen that clip like 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And now it resurfaced. And I think it hit over 10 million views when they put it out. So it's been wild.
What impact do you feel that social media has had on your career? Because you have a lot of clips. I'm sure I follow a lot of your stuff, so the algorithm pops up Jared DeGuzman on my socials. But what impact has that had from Instagram, TikTok, Facebook?
Yeah, the social media impact?
Yeah.
It's been huge. It's really been one of the biggest tools in my career of being able to reach an audience with what I'm doing and what I love to do. Over Christmas of last year, so December of 2021, I got COVID. And I had all this time at home, had nothing to do. I started posting like 4 clips a day on Facebook and found this new fan base on there. And a year ago on TikTok, I started posting every day a post on TikTok and built like, I think like over 200,000 on there. And same thing with Instagram, started posting every day. I would ask for a question. I'd ask people, give me a topic to write a song about. And I would put a song out based on that topic and built a following on there. And so it's just been, as a creative, it's just such a great way to connect with people who, you know, you might not have been able to show your stuff to back in the day. It just lets you have a bigger audience to really communicate with, connect with.
A person that we've had on the show that I believe you've performed with maybe at least once or twice, OG in the Filipino-American comedy scene, Rex Navarrete.
Rex, yeah, I forgot to give him a shout out earlier. Yeah, I've performed with him a good handful of times.
That the difference between comedy with Filipinos here and the comedy in the Philippines, it's still kind of growing in the Philippines. I know you've been back a few times. I know a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I know some of the comedy, stand-up comedy scene is definitely still evolving, and a lot of the humor that is, it's almost like vaudeville, but with gay men or lesbian women out there.
What's like, it's kind of like drag. Yeah.
So how do you see, when you've been able to go to the Philippines, how the stand-up scene, were you able to see any of it out there?
I think it's great. Yeah, so I went back. I haven't been back recently, but there's a few guys who are at the forefront of the new scene, like Red Olero, GB Labrador, and what is his name? Is it James Karaan? There's a lot of really great comics who, I think the cool thing about a new scene that starts in a new country is that in the US, right, we kind of have an idea of what stand-up is and how it should be done. We're influenced by our peers, and there's so many certain styles, like specific styles of people emulating each other. I think what I saw in the Philippines is it's like, it's cool to see a different style evolve, because there, it's almost like evolution, where in the Galapagos, there's this place that's been untouched by outside influence. All these different creatures and species evolved that Darwin found. I would say it's the same thing of when you go travel to a new scene, Like I saw a stand-up scene in Malaysia and Singapore and Japan and the Philippines, and they're all very unique compared to what I've seen in the US. And I'm sure they would say the same thing when they came to the US or go to the UK, but I think there's a lot of really great, unique talent and voices in the Philippines who are, you know, I'm excited to see when the Philippine scene breaks out on an international level, you know, getting one of those guys a special on Netflix or something, because they're just as good, I think, and as some of the comics I've seen in the States.
And for our listeners, just a reminder that you are listening to J.R. de Guzman here on the Filipino-American National News. J.R. will be performing at the Minneapolis Comedy Festival on Tuesday, June the 14th at 7 p.m. at the Women's Assembly. J.R., you said that that was, from our talk before the interview, that that is the second stop on your tour, where now you're going to bigger venues than from the past.
Yes. Yeah, so this year I've been doing a lot of comedy clubs, which was a blessing. And now I'm stepping into my first theaters. My first one is June 4th at the Wilbur in Boston. And Minneapolis will be my second theater headlining at, yeah, the Assembly, the Women's Club in Minneapolis. And a wild story is, at the beginning of this year, you know, my fan base really grew, like, is growing, is continuing to grow, like, right now, which is a blessing. It's wild. I'm enjoying the ride, every second of it. But like I said, in January, I wrote down in my resolutions, okay, I just want to sell out a one-nighter at a stand-up comedy club, which is like a small venue, usually 150 to 300, just sell out one show. That's my goal. And then from there, sell out a weekend of shows. And then from there, I sell out a theater. And now it's actually happening this year, which is insane. San Francisco sold out within the first 2 weeks, and we just added a second show. This is in October. And then the Seattle theater sold out within the first 2 weeks. We added a second show out there. So, you know, fingers crossed that, you know, Boston and Minneapolis, I think, are pretty close to selling out as well right now. But, you know, definitely would love to see more Filipinos out there. And I'm grateful to, you know, reach out to some Filipinos who either know me or who don't know me, but that might come to the show on the 14th and just know about me coming.
And JR, before we let you go, how do you feel that your comedy's evolved? You said you've been in the game for 11 years. How do you think things have changed or remained the same as you've become a stronger comic?
I think for me as a comic, it's always changing, always evolving. I think being honest with myself in the moment is the hardest but the best thing to do. Like you asked about, you know, spirituality, van life, all that stuff. I think being able to have what's going on in my life reflect what I'm doing on stage is a way that I want to continue evolving. So I want to keep getting personal up there, maybe showing talents that I haven't shown, like maybe one day playing the drums on stage, playing the keyboard on stage, bringing a band on stage. And then also just, like, I don't know, maybe growing with the people that I'm connecting with, like the fans who are joining right now are seeing one thing, and maybe like 5 years, 10 years from now, they'll see maybe I'll do a movie or something, and like, oh, cool. You know, I want to grow with the people that are coming out to see me right now. And overall, just like, I think, like, maybe this is separate from the career stuff, but like, just as much as I want to create a great career and look at the body of work, what I'm doing on stage, I want to, you know, create a great life, be able to have a family, you know, the people who I meet in person, be able to like influence their life for good in some way. And, you know, I think that's what it's all about, really.
Well, it's good to see that you're in a great part of your evolution, your life. I know you're hearing a different podcast that I can't remember the last name, but a guy named Brent that, you know, sometimes for comedians that they think they have to be in a certain city to be a comedian or to be a successful comedian. And nowadays you might not necessarily have to be in an LA, you could be as in a North Dakota, Fargo, or I mean, you could be in Minneapolis. It's just how hard you work at the game. For our listeners that want to learn more about J.R. de Guzman, where can they find you on your social medias?
Sure. I mean, jrdeguzman.com is where a lot of info is, but Instagram, JRDGUZ, J.R. de Guz. TikTok is JRDEGUZ. And then Facebook, just J.R. de Guzman. You'll find my comedy page. And then I'm also on YouTube, J.R. de Guzman.
Well, JR, thank you for the time that you spent with us here on the